It's the KGOU Readers Club. I'm KGOU Managing Editor Logan Layden. This month we highlight Behold the Walls by Clara Looper, who we're going to talk a lot about this hour with my guest, Dr. Carlos Hill, who joins me now. Dr. Hill, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Logan.
Yeah, and we've talked before here on the Readers Club related to your photographic history of the Tulsa Race Massacre. That was sort of at the very beginning of the program. We started this to kind of highlight the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa Race Massacre, and it has continued since then. So welcome back. You're one of our few returning guests that we've had so far.
It's great to be back. Always great to come back and be in conversation.
Yes, indeed. And since it's been, that's been a couple of years ago now, let's go ahead and reintroduce you to the listeners. Tell me a little bit about yourself. You're here at OU. And in fact, Clara Looper is the namesake of the position that you hold right now. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, sir. So I am a Black Studies professor at the University of Oklahoma in the Clara Looper Department of African-American Studies. The Clara Looper Department came into existence in 2017 when I was chair. We were fortunate enough to ask the family, the Looper family, particularly Marilyn Looper, Calvin Looper, Shelley Looper, Clara Looper's children, surviving children, if on the 60th anniversary of the Catch Drugstore sit-in, if naming our department in her honor would be a beautiful homage to her decades of service to Black people, but also to Oklahomans, would that be a nice gesture, a nice homage to a life well lived? And fortunate for us, the family loved the idea. And in 2018, we became the Clara Looper Department of African and African American Studies. And so it's been the one of the biggest honors of my career to be the founding chair of the Clara Looper Department. I'm no longer chair of the department now, but I was the founding chair of the Clara Looper Department. And since then have continued to serve Clara, the life and legacy of Clara Looper through the Clara Looper Legacy Committee that Marilyn Looper, her daughter, and also her comrade, who was, you know, in the midst of all the struggles that Mother Looper was in, Marilyn Looper has helped me to understand since we've become a department, Clara Looper Department, just the power and the inspiration of Clara Looper. And so that's what brings us to today and the Behold the Walls being republished.
And I mean, what a life she led, that even after her passing, which was back in 2011, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Her legacy certainly continues. Very important figure in the civil rights movement, not only here in Oklahoma, but nationally as well, that has, you know, maybe not the first name that you think of if you're here in Oklahoma, we're aware of her, but outside here, not so much. I suppose that's one of the reasons why you wanted to try to reissue her memoir of her time as part of the movement, right?
Well, Behold the Walls, Clara Looper's memoir of the Oklahoma City sit-in movement, but also just the civil rights movement in Oklahoma. Behold the Walls is a memoir. It allows us access to Clara Looper's thoughts, her ideas, the actions that she and her students took in her own words. And so she originally, Clara Looper originally published this, self-published this in 1979. And subsequently, I would say by the time of her death, the book was out of print, and she was working with, trying to work with several publishers to get it republished. And it unfortunately didn't happen before her death. And since she's passed away in 2011, there's been a couple of efforts, but nothing came of it. And so we know at least a decade, Behold the Walls has been out of print. And it was just a blessing that we were able to get a new edition of Behold the Walls completed in advance of the 65th anniversary of the Cass Drugstore sit-in movement.
Yeah, so it's been out of print for over a decade now, but no longer. It is out now, and this is through OU Press. And I, you know, often, more often than not, we here on Reader's Club, we talk. I try to talk to authors of books. This is not the case this time. This is Clara Looper's
yes.
book,
yes.
but it is. This is a commemorative edition, and it was edited by you. Dr.
Yes,
Carlos Hill, and also Bob Blackburn, who we're familiar with as far as his work with Oklahoma history, one of my favorite people actually to interview. So we're actually talking to the editor, one of the editors of the latest edition of Behold the Walls.
Yes.
And kind of take me before we, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the contents of the book, of course, and the civil rights yes. movement. But as far as this, the work that you did, what did you and Dr. Blackburn do here exactly? How is this different from her original version? Can you just tell me a little bit about the process of editing this and what did you all change, highlight, mm-hmm. just
yeah.
please tell
yeah.
me. Yeah.
So this is edited, you know, this is edited in the sense that we carefully read the contents for typographical errors, small grammatical errors that weren't corrected in the original, things of that nature. So we had the very lightest touch in terms of the text, but where it's truly a commemorative edition is we tried to make the Behold the Walls that was created more than three or four decades ago speak to people today. And so to that end, we created a new preface that Marilyn Looper and Calvin Looper wrote. We created a new introduction to the commemorative edition that would help to explain in greater detail, given the research that's happened since Mother Looper's death and the things that have been unearthed. We wanted to really bring her life and legacy up to date, so we wrote a new introduction. In addition, because Behold the Walls, when it was created, the photographs in the book, we could not copy and paste them because we didn't have the original files. We had to include new photographs. And in fact, these were, I would say, higher quality, better photographs that we were able to include in this commemorative edition. Besides that, besides those new pieces, what we really tried to do was to leave alone the text and just really have Mother Looper's voice speak clearly. So in some edited texts, you'll have a lot of footnotes. We, as an editor, I decided not to do that. I wanted her voice to come through as clearly as possible without any kind of extra, you know, footnotes or any kind of text to distract from her words. So we had Dr. Blackburn and I had the very lightest touch in terms of altering the text, save for small errors, minute errors that were in the original that were never corrected. But for this edition, we wanted to make sure to do so. So we had a very light touch.
And when did this process start? If you can kind of take me through how long this took, when did the idea come about to do this?
Yes. Well, the idea had been bubbling for a while, even before I became chair of the Clara Looper Department, even before I joined the Legacy Committee in 2017, 2018. I had heard people even at OU talk about Behold the Walls and trying to get it republished. Again, nothing came of those efforts that I was hearing about even before I joined in the Legacy Committee and commemorating the life and legacy of Clara Looper. But save to say, in 2020, March of 2020, the Legacy Committee took a trip to Washington, D.C. to meet with the Smithsonian, both the National African American History Museum and the National American History Museum, to talk to them about the life and legacy of Clara Looper and to convince them to add the 1958 Catch Drugstore sit-in to their civil rights exhibition because of its significance. We went there, we petitioned them for a couple of days, and it was during that trip that I had a conversation with Marilyn Looper and Dr. Blackburn about if we're really trying to convince people about Mother Looper's significance, we need to help ourselves and we need to get her Behold the Walls in back in print so that people can read about, not just us tell them about, but people can read about the impact of her work. And so it was on that trip when we visited DC, talked to the Smithsonian, that we decided to really make a determined effort to get it republished. And so March of 2020 is when the idea came to being, and it's taken all that time to pull it together. And the goal for us at the very beginning of the process was to make sure that the book could be accessible, could be out for the public by the 65th anniversary of the Catch Drugstore sit-in. And so we were able to accomplish that. It took us 3 years. But Dr. Blackburn and I, worked pretty steadily right up until the book was finished in December of this past year, 22.
So a trip to Washington, D.C. was important as it
Oh, yeah.
relates to the reissuance of Behold the Walls here, which a trip to Washington, D.C. was also important for Clara Looper during the days of the civil rights movement, which we'll talk
Yes.
about here in just a little bit. Behold the Walls is the name of the book, and even in her own words, as you read through it, you talk about the light touch that you and Dr. Blackburn had with this, and you can really get a sense of her personality as you read through the book. But the name itself, Behold the Walls, walls are a bit of a theme throughout the entirety of it. She encountered walls going back to her own education as a young person, then of course through the civil rights movement, and then even later, when she was running for Senate. Can you talk about the title of the book and some of the walls that she faced early on? Because even while she was getting her own education, even in high school and then at Langston in college, she was encountering these walls.
Yes. Let me read Clara Looper's poem, Behold the Walls, to give the audience
Please do.
a sense of how important walls are to her. Her poem, Behold the Walls, begins, "Behold the walls. Do you see what I see? Visible walls, invisible walls separating you and me. The visible walls are crumbling as court decisions are handed down. The invisible walls are still standing, making us go round and round. Each of us must be a Joshua blowing our trumpet of freedom's songs, and the walls will come tumbling down, and the world will right the wrong." Behold the walls, Clara Looper. Walls for Clara Looper, in some ways, and certainly those visible walls symbolized injustice, right? And when she says, "Each of us must be a Joshua blowing our trumpet of freedom songs," we must call out injustice and we must bear witness and fight against it as Joshua or as a Joshua. And so walls for her were injustices in society that needed to be that people needed to bear witness to blow their horns like Joshua. And so walls are very important. Combating walls, combating injustice, climbing over them. Like Claire, that was one of her most important metaphors, I would say, for teaching her students. So you're right to seize upon that.
Well, and she also talks about, the visible walls. This would be the things like the actual laws related
Jim Crow
to
segregation laws,
segregation.
absolutely.
But the invisible walls,
The
that's
white racism, the hatred, the white supremacy, the things that created the visible walls, like she was about trying to undermine those. Like And those invisible walls, the hatred, the white supremacy, what Claire Looper had for that was her radical love. She believed that she was in service to dismantling segregation as well as the hate that created it. So it was always about the segregationists transforming them, not just transforming segregation policies. And so that's Clara Looper, right? In her, like, those are the invisible walls that she sought to fight, that racism, that white supremacy, changing people's hearts and minds.
And those invisible walls have not been completely torn down. We still are dealing with that to this day, certainly. I do want to, you know, talk about her in particular and the journey that she went on in her life. How did Clara Looper come to be this civil rights leader, this activist, this person that was sort of the leader of that NAACP youth organization, the youth council? How did she get there from where she was? What brought her to that?
Yes. Let me tell you this before I start. I like to ground people in, you know, my knowledge of Mother Looper. You know, I am a scholar of Black studies. I'm a scholar of lynching and racial violence. And, you know, in coming to Oklahoma in 2016, joining the Clara Looper Department, or, you know, playing a role in founding it, the department, and then now on the Legacy Committee, I've come to know Clara Looper not through research, just primarily through research and archival research. I've come to know Mother Looper through interviewing and spending lots of time with her daughter, as well as other sit-inners. And so what I share about Mother Looper often is not scholarly research that I've dived into the archive. It's really stories from her family, her students that over the last 6 years I've been curating. And so I say that because what I've mostly done with Mother Looper over the last 6 years is really curate a kind of felt history, the memories that the sit-iners have of her. And that's kind of been my way at this point of getting to know her best, besides editing this text and doing, you know, and teaching about it. I say all that to say that we can start when Mother Looper was 35 and she was invited to be the advisor for the NAACP Youth Council in 1957-58. We could take that as a starting point, or we could start in her childhood when Mother Looper witnesses as a child her brother be denied care, medical care, and that denial of care unfortunately cost him his life, right? The segregation of Oklahoma, right, being denied access to medical care because he was Black, being turned away, right, by a white hospital, cost him, right, his life. Right. And that the memory of that deprivation, the memory of the, not just the memory of it, just the trauma of it, I think remained a part of Mother Looper, instilled her in her fights against segregation. She always knew what was at stake because of the ways in which she had been so brutal. Her and her family, not just her Black people, she were intimately aware of how segregation, right, had dehumanized Black people. And so even at the age of 35, Clara Looper had witnessed up close and personal the evils of segregation. And so by the time she's 35, she's a school teacher. She's graduated from Langston University with her bachelor's in history. She's also, by this point, by 35, graduated with a master's from the University of Oklahoma in education, history of education. And so at 35, Clara Looper is a teacher and one of the few Black graduates, college graduates from an Oklahoma university. And so in 1935, Clara Looper is invited because there's a leadership change in the NAACP Youth Council, and it creates an opportunity for her to lead. And you know what makes Mother Looper, in my mind, so special is she was a leader, she was a community leader, but she allowed the students, right, to lead her and help her to understand what needed to happen, what needed to happen, excuse me, in terms of the movement. And so everything that Mother Looper did with the NAACP Youth Council really emerged as an idea from the students that she ended up supporting, that she ended up helping them to make better. But it really was about her allowing the students to lead. And so, but I would say her deep history, right, and intimacy with Jim Crow segregation in Oklahoma as a child and how she saw it, play a devastating role in her life, remained with her, stilled her, and actually I think was a kind of a rock for her during the movements that she led subsequently in the 1950s and 60s.
You know, we always, the Katz drugstore sit-in is talked about a lot. I guess maybe you'd call it the most famous of the sit-ins that she participated in and sort of spearheaded. But actually, that is really the John A. Brown's. That seemed harder. Like the Katz one seemed to be resolved at least fairly quickly in comparison to some of the other ones. I guess it's because it was the first one. And where does that fit in on the, was that the first, was that had to have been one of the first sit-ins in the whole country, right? This is years before some of the ones you hear about nationally.
Yes. This is where I have spent most of my scholarly time trying to situate, position this story, particularly the story of Katz Drugstore in history, both locally, regionally, nationally. Yes, you're right. The Katz Drugstore sit-in was one of the first sit-ins. And I would argue it is perhaps the most impactful of the early sit-ins because Katz Drugstore, this large chain of drugstores, it's 50 plus stores, desegregates following the activism of Marilyn Looper and the original 13 sit-iners of the Katz Drugstore sit-in. Like that galvanized the sit-in movement. That one campaign galvanized, I would argue, the entirety of the sit-in movement that began in earnest in February of 1960. And so where I spent most of my scholarly time is really trying to make that link, really trying to make clear that Clara Looper and her 13 students, their courage, their activism, vis-a-vis Katz, led to the Greensboro sit-ins, and then from Greensboro in 1960 to all the rest that came after, including the Freedom Rides, which was a byproduct of the student, the sit-in movements beginning with SNCC in 1960. So we have to connect Mother Looper with that, and we have to see, and what we've tried to do, and I've tried to do when anytime I speak about her publicly, is to make sure that people understand that she has been an unsung hero in this story, explaining why it takes more time, but nonetheless, she has been, and it's what we're trying to do in republishing the book is help to address that.
That's Dr. Carlos Hill. This is the KGOU Readers Club. I'm KGOU Managing Editor Logan Layden. As we continue our conversation here this hour about Behold the Walls, Clara Looper's book that you recently edited and has now been re-released after being out of print for over a decade. That's as far as the Katz Drugstore sit-in, that, like you say, it was a huge chain of drugstores. So that didn't just impact the Oklahoma City location. whenever that desegregated, they did it across the entire
Chain of
company.
stores. Yes. So
And
across the company, and there were stores again across Oklahoma. There were stores in Kansas. There were stores in Missouri. All those stores, as a result of the August 19, 1958 sit-in, desegregated. And so the Catch Drugstore campaign, the brief campaign, showed that direct activism could reap tremendous rewards. And so that was the inspiration for Greensboro, that that sit-ins can be really successful, right? If you apply the pressure consistently, and if you do it nonviolently. And so all this is what Clara Looper and the Catch Drugstore campaign proves early on in the sit-in movement. And so for what I say, is the Catch Drugstore sit-in is truly a watershed moment. A watershed moment where students truly become the shock troops of the movement, where students begin to lead the movement. We can see that most clearly with Clara Looper and her students.
And so, yep, Cats the first famous. I found it as reading Behold the Walls. It was really John A. Brown's that was extremely interesting to me because, and John A. Brown's, this was a department store, right?
Yes.
And it was a place that had a cafeteria down in the basement, and a place that Clara Looper that blacks had been able to eat at before without too much problem. But once the movement started, that changed, right? And that seemed like it was a much more difficult effort to get them to desegregate than even it was for cats. And we don't hear about the John A. Brown's much as much.
Yeah, and I should say that even though the Katz drugstore campaign was relatively brief, that doesn't mean it was easy. There was, if you talk to, I had the good fortune to just about a month ago be able to sit down with some of the original participants in the Katz drugstore sit-in and talk to them 65 years later about what that meant to them. And they recalled, they viscerally recalled the violence, the vile things that people said to them, the ways in which as a 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old, because those are the ages of the students, they were really frightened. But nonetheless, they went down the Catch drugstore not knowing what might happen to them, what people might do, take them to jail or worse, because Mother Looper had so instilled in them a sense of inspiration and courage, and this is what we're going to do when we're there, so that they even though they felt trepidation, they were prepared. And so the Catch movement was tough. Right. Those student activists recall some of the most vile things being said, and still sticks with them to this day. But nonetheless, after 2 days of courageous protesting, sitting down, not being served, and on the second day, when whites knew they were going to be there, and there's a media presence, there was not only things being said, but they were being shoved. They were being mistreated. Again, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds. And so the power of those children courageously standing up is what transformed and inspired, I think, others in the movement to do the same thing. And so that's why for me, Catch Drugstore is this watershed moment that we really need to give more attention to, that we really need to highlight Mother Looper and her contributions to more.
Yeah, you think of oh, the NAACP Youth Council in Oklahoma. So I'm thinking in my head, you know, 15, 16, 17 year olds, high school students. But no, like you said, we are literally talking about like 7 and 8 year old kids were involved in this, movement.
Yes. Yes. I believe the youngest was 6 years old, Lana Pogue. She was 6 years old. She participated. Her sister, Ayana Najuma, was 7 years old, and she was the young person that I think is most seen in footage or photography of the Cash Drugstore sit-in, because she's the lone sort of sit-inner that on the second day, the Oklahoman took a photo. Actually, there were two instances of her being photographed, but there is one photograph that's kind of an iconic image of Ayana sitting at the lunch counter on the second day. So she was 7. And so that helps you to understand just the power of Mother Looper, right? She was able to organize and train 6 and 7 year olds to fight injustice.
That's amazing. And in some cases, it took people even younger than that to get changed. I want to talk about Ann Maud's cafeteria a little bit. And that was another one where a baby basically kind of saved the day there. Tell that story a little bit and how that went down.
Well, we're getting into sort of parts of the book where Mother Looper is narrating various strategies for trying to circumvent and just agitate these store owners who are reluctant at best to communicate, talk with her about, negotiate about ending their segregationist policies. And so it's in the book, the story kind of reveals Mother Looper's humor, her sort of wittiness, her playfulness. And the story is kind of around sort of integrating Ann Maud through smuggling in, right, a baby who is Black, right, but who could pass as white. I think, is this the story that you're referring to?
That is correct. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Where it was,
there's a couple of them.
Yeah, the cafeteria had refused to let any of the Black people in, and so this was a way to sort of sneak someone in there. It happened, and it was a baby that they had kind of wrapped up, but that was it. That was just, they got through the door. They got served. Yeah.
As a kind of a symbolic victory, as a kind of it doesn't necessarily, it didn't change, you know, anything necessarily, but it's a kind of story that helps you to understand the links, the extent, the kind of the ways in which Mother Looper and her students, did everything that they could within their power to put pressure on businesses to desegregate. That story really helps to illustrate.
And we go a little bit of a little out of order here, but we talked a little bit about your trip to Washington and the impetus for this book. It was a trip to Washington with the Youth Council members back then during the Civil Rights Movement that obviously had a huge impact not only on Clara Looper, but probably those students even more so. They met Dr. King. They went to George Washington's estate. Can you talk a little bit about the impact that trip had on this organization? Because a lot of those people had never been out of Oklahoma before or experienced the way things were out there on the East Coast, which was a lot less segregated than what they were used to experiencing in their own lives here.
Yes, and this is definitely a major part of the felt history of the Cash Drugstore sit-in. I've learned from Marilyn Looper in particular how important the trip to New York City and then the traveling to New York City to present a play that Mother Looper had written, but to perform it to the NAACP national body, they traveled to New York City, not just the individuals who were performing in the play, but the entirety of the youth council went along. And so because of that, it was a truly galvanizing experience. The way in which a 9 or 10 year old Marilyn Looper would tell the story is for the first time in her life, she traveled outside of Oklahoma and was able to experience eating in a restaurant just like anyone else, not having to go around back, not having to receive it through a window when whites can receive could receive it at the counter. She recalled feeling like a human being for the first time. And one of the things that she says often to me is a little bit of freedom is a dangerous thing. A little bit of freedom was a dangerous thing for a 9-year-old Marilyn Looper and the NAACP Youth Council, because once they experienced that, coming back the southern route, so they went traveled a northern route that took them away from segregationist policies and got to experience sort of integrated dining facilities. But when they returned from New York City, traveling through the South, they were re-exposed, all right, to the segregation of the South. And it was in the coming back South that they decided that when they got back to Oklahoma, that they would begin to challenge segregationist ordinances. And so initially, when they returned, they engaged in a letter writing campaign to various businesses, got very little response and definitely less movement. And so the lack of response, as well as the desire to try to, push, right, push forward the movement, they decided to engage in direct action. And the idea to go down to Catch Drugstore came directly from Marilyn Looper, because of that little bit of freedom that she talked about. And so that trip galvanized them to fight injustice here in Oklahoma.
Even though she was just a little kid at the time. And in their travels, I believe, unless I'm mistaken, I think it was when they were on their way back to Oklahoma, because I do want to talk about just a couple of the other characters in the book, including Melvin Porter,
Yes,
who
sir.
she referred to as the Patrick Henry of the sit-ins. And I think they met in Nashville, and he had ties to Oklahoma and eventually came here and became very important, had a very important role.
Yes, no, and I think, there's a handful of individuals who surrounded Mother Looper and gave her guidance, even tough love, things that she didn't want to hear. There was a small group of them, and definitely E. Melvin Porter was one of them. And he did, in fact, on the way back to Oklahoma after this amazing trip, right? After this little bit of freedom that Marilyn Looper tastes, on their way back, traveling that southern wild route, they meet Marilyn and group meet for the first time. E. Melvin Porter share with him, the work that they're doing, talk to him about what they're going to be doing in Oklahoma, and really challenge him in some really interesting ways to join them, given his sort of connection already, connection with the state. And so that's the kind of thing that just really has continued to amaze me about Mother Looper, the ways in which she could inspire people, not just students, but people, to bear witness to injustice, and to fight alongside her students, fighting against segregation. Her ability, to just connect with people and make people believe, it's just off the charts.
And she wasn't relegated just to Oklahoma. I mean, we talked about going to Washington. She also was she not she was at the March on Washington. She spent some time in Selma, Alabama, right? She
Oh, yeah.
not all of her activities were relegated to just here in Oklahoma.
No, Mother Looper certainly was a national figure. She's best known for her, and she should be, better known for the work that she did here in Oklahoma and how that rippled across the country. But certainly, when you think about the biggest moments in the civil rights movement, whether it's the March on Washington, or even if we think about, which is Dr. King's sort of iconic moment, 1963, August 1963, Clara Looper and her students are there participating. But also, when Dr. King passes, and when he's slain in April of 1968, Mother Looper is at his funeral. And in fact, in Ebenezer Baptist Church, right, the church that in Atlanta, where Dr. King hails from, there's a photograph on the wall of that funeral. And in that photograph, Mother Looper is pictured in it because she was there. And she's pictured right behind the casket at Dr. King's funeral. And so she, again, was an unsung hero, a national figure that, in so many ways, I hope her book, Behold the Walls, will help to make her, for this generation, a national figure that we remember having impact, not just in Oklahoma, but across the country.
Well, if that's going to be the case, then the book needs to be in print, which it hasn't been for quite some time until now. And once again, it is Behold the Walls. That is by Clara Looper, edited the latest edition by Dr. Carlos Hill and also Bob Blackburn as well. And this is the KGOU Readers Club. I'm managing editor Logan Layden as we continue our conversation here. There are other figures in the book that that pop up that she mentions. Charlton Heston, the famous actor, came here to Oklahoma, and this is just one of the kind of the little highlights of the book. Tell us a little bit about that, his visit, and his sort of relationship to the movement and to Clara Looper.
Well, it's kind of interesting to even bring up Charlton Heston, in this relation, given kind of where he is now and kind of how he's kind of, sort of, in a different place now, but certainly in the 1960s as a supporter, a vocal supporter and financier, giving money to movement causes, Charlton Heston was someone who, in the 1960s, Mother Looper had, and what I need to understand better, a little bit better, and this is where more archival research will help, is just the extent to which there was a relationship, a substantive one. But certainly in the book, Charlton Heston, as well as other kind of iconic people, make appearances. In terms of Heston, his support of the movement, that's one of the places where I really need to do more work. But I certainly, he, as well as, and I could list off others from the book who were, celebrity types that many of us would not know had some sort of played a role in the Oklahoma movement. But certainly, even we could certainly think about, big movement figures like Malcolm X, or even people like Harry Belafonte. Like all these individuals existed as a part of networks. And Mother Looper, because she was such a fixture within the NAACP, both locally, statewide, and at the national level, and because those organizations were in many ways doing, not complementary work, but they were working together, funding civil rights causes, et cetera, that Mother Looper becomes a really integral part, right, of those networks. And so she's popping up at the March on Washington, not just because she's, you know, in the NAACP or she just wants to be there. No, it's because she's really glued into these networks. She's respected within these networks. One of the things that I'm really saddened by is that many of the records, like the correspondence between Mother Looper and Dr. King, Mother Looper and Malcolm X, we lost a lot of those that correspondence when the Freedom Center was firebombed, burned down. We lost a lot of her correspondence with Dr. King and Malcolm X. But nonetheless, we know that they had relationships. We knew that they knew each other because of the trips to the NAACP annual convention, where Dr. King was a fixture as well. So just trying to make that clear that Mother Looper isn't kind of standing outside of them, but she's a part of them, is really, really important.
And her work did not stop after the sit-ins were successful, after we had desegregation, going so far as to run for Senate in 1972, I believe it was. Do you know much about like what motivated her toward that? When you read the book, people are asking her, do you really think you can win? Why did she feel like that was necessary to do, to try for that high office?
You know what? That's a place where, again, I really haven't spent a lot of time thinking about, and I haven't really interviewed Marilyn Looper much about it. I keep talking about interviewing Marilyn Looper because right now I'm in the beginning stages of creating a book with her on the Catch Drugstore movement. And so I'm kind of really focused on the earlier part and less on her later life. But that's definitely a place where I really need to, deepen my scholarship. But just thinking about just that period of Black history, African American history, it is a moment where I think some of the most important civil rights activists are beginning to trans excuse me, they're beginning to transition into electoral politics because the movement has succeeded in integrating American society. And so now it's time to actually use political power, right? Not just activist power, but political power. And so I think Mother Looper was a part of a wave of Black activists who began to transition into electoral politics in the 1970s.
Well, Dr. Hill, the last thing I want to ask you here, and I don't know if you know, you've had conversations with her children very, very extensively, and continue to work with Marilyn, right? I'm curious about she passed away, Clara Looper, in 2011. For some of these leaders from that movement from the 50s and the 60s and into the 70s, do you have an idea, or has she told you? As Clara Looper got toward the end of her life, how she felt about the progress that had been made when she looked at the world in the 2000s versus, the sit-in times, whether she felt like a lot of progress had been made or that there was so much more to do. Do you have any sense of her attitude there toward the end of her life, toward where we are at as far as relations, race relations here in the United States?
Logan, you are giving me so many research questions today. I don't know if she was disappointed about the progress or feeling perhaps that being feeling buoyed by what had been accomplished and what could be accomplished in the future. I just don't know, but just I don't know her particular thoughts, but just knowing who she was as a person and knowing that most intimately from Maryland, she wasn't someone who ever thought that the job was done. There was always more to do, be done. There was always someone or something to be in support of, advocating for. And so for her, when she was 35, she joined, I would say like directly in a really direct capacity, the civil rights movement. And she never at any time stopped engaging in civil rights activism, right? She never thought that that the day was on the horizon that, racism had ended and all the problems. Like, she was, to the day that she passed away, fighting injustice. Marilyn Looper proudly tells me all the time, right, how her mother for 50 years took students every year for 50 plus years, actually, to the NAACP Youth Council, NAACP National Meeting. She took members of the Youth Council with her for 50 years. That is the level of commitment that she had to fighting injustice, and she did that to her last breath. And so I know that she wasn't satisfied with progress because she kept working.
Dr. Carlos Hill, thank you so much for joining me today. I know that that you've got to go, but I appreciate the conversation. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for having me, and I hope we can make it a third time.
I believe we probably will. Sounds like you're still working. Once again, the book is Behold the Walls. That is by Clara Looper, the civil rights leader, but the latest edition edited partially by Dr. Carlos Hill, who we just spoke to. It's the KGOU Readers Club, and I'm managing editor Logan Layden.